Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithtimmery.com.
Welcome to Sex with Timmery. This is Dr. Timmery. And today you have an extra special treat. You have a whole group of people today are getting interviewed from the Frank Theater Company who are involved in A Thought in Three Parts, which is a play which is going to be opening. When are y'all opening?
February 2nd.
Ooh, that's coming right up. Yeah. All right. So who all is here? Introduce yourselves. We got Frederico, Sarah, Catherine. Let's all say how you're all involved. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'm Sarah, and I'm a director and actor in A Thought in Three Parts.
I'm Fed, and I'm just acting in the middle part, the sexual part.
My name is Catherine Cooper, and I'm the dramaturg for the project.
Ooh, that's a title.
Yeah, I guess so. It's a German word. It must be important.
Wow, I'm immediately saluting you. All right, so this show is pretty controversial and has had a history of not getting produced all that often. So can you tell people a little bit more about it?
Yeah, absolutely. Catherine, would you like to talk about the places it has not been produced?
Sure, I can definitely talk about that. Yeah. So I don't have the exact dates in front of me, but this show was written in, I believe, 75 or 76, 1975 or 76. And it was staged in New York City. A staged reading of it happened in New York City. And then it went overseas to England, to London. And there was one full production there and then, I believe, another staged reading in 1976. And since then, it has not been very widely produced at all. The most recent production that I can find as of yet was done by the Yale Cabaret in now last year, 2011. And then before that, there was a production in Austin, Texas, which was actually the U.S. premiere, which I think was in 2007. So that's a pretty big gap for a play between 1976 and 2007. So those are some of the places that it has not been produced.
So yeah. What accounts for that? Why is this play not getting produced?
In London, the production of A Thought in Three Parts sparked a whole debate in the House of Lords about what constituted a play, because they felt that this was porn on stage. There's a great deal of simulated sex and nudity in the second part of the play. That it's a thought in three parts. So the second thought has a great deal of nudity and simulated sex, and the actors take off their clothes, and there are, I think we counted 20 different kinds of sex acts that are portrayed on stage.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good repertoire. I'd say that the average person would have difficulty naming that many. So this is a whole lot for an actor to get involved in. It's not just the standard production. So how did you prepare for this?
Well, we didn't just jump into the play directly. We actually had, I would say, about a month or a month and a half where we just got comfortable with each other and each other's bodies. In the early rehearsals, we did a couple of exercises that helped us out. We would start by playing some music, like maybe classical music, and manipulate each other's bodies in a dancer-like fashion, almost as if you are the puppet master and the other person is the puppet. And then maybe in the fourth or fifth rehearsal, we turned that into, we would all have our eyes closed for all of this. And then people would take off their clothes and we would bathe. The word that Sarah used, Sarah ran these rehearsals as director. The word that she used was bathing each other. So we would kind of just move our hands as if it was soap all over the other person's body, being, you know, wary of their boundaries. And then they would do the same to us. And then I think it really allowed us to be comfortable in the way that, you know, you're being naked with somebody else, in the way that you're comfortable with a lover. And we, it also gave us an end to the play to be really spiritual about the whole thing. Because then later on, we started rehearsing, you know, actually doing the scenes and having to choreograph it. And when you start choreographing sex, it becomes much more external very, very quickly, much more athletic. And so so this in, having this internal base is really important.
And how did this experience for you relate to anything in your personal life? Were there, what were the emotions that you experienced as you went through this? How did it feel for you as a person in addition to being a performer?
Well, one of the exercises that we did was Sarah said, you know, let's all show each other positions that we take when we masturbate. And I think it was really enlightening to have a certain, just to show certain positions that I take maybe, you know, very often, maybe every day, that not a soul has seen, and just show people that. It felt kind of silly that I had never shown people, and but definitely very liberating to be able to be comfortable with a group of my peers and to kind of show them these things that have been secret for a long time.
So Sarah, as director, what sort of response and emotions are you hoping to evoke from an audience member?
Well, I think hopefully there will be many responses. The play deals with intimacy and deals with human exchanges on many levels. And I think that including, I hope that it's entertaining to watch, and there are parts that I find very funny, but I also think that the audience could potentially become aroused at points or angry. There might be aversion to the material. An audience may experience a deep identification, hopefully, with their own life and their own experiences with intimacy. I think that there are parts of the play, for me, as I watch all the actors working, that are so, have been so private, sexual experiences and different kinds of dynamics that come up in sexual situations in terms of power and in terms of play. When I watch them, I feel there's almost like a cognitive dissonance because I'm seeing something that I've experienced only in private situations, but I'm allowed to experience them with the performers in the room. And rather than feel like a voyeur, I feel very much almost like the performers are going through some sort of catharsis, and I'm able to go through that with them as they kind of take the audience and share with them their own behaviors. And there are so many different kinds of sexual acts throughout the course of the middle play, but also different kinds of interactions between and among the performers, that I think that there will be moments when the audience is touched by their own identification. And I don't know. I mean, I think particularly with this play, it definitely will be defined to a great extent by the audience, because there are moments that I feel like are really absurd and comedic. But if an audience doesn't laugh, then it's not a comedy. I mean, the audience defines so much of the shared experience. So I'm really looking forward to seeing all the different, I mean, I expect there to be, and I hope that there will be many different kinds of reactions to this play, especially because of its nature. And it's a sensitive subject for some, and it may be more of an aesthetic experience for others, but I'm really excited to see the way an audience interacts with the material.
And Catherine, as dramaturge, you help the cast come up with ideas for how they're going to present this that does set that mood. Like, How are you contributing in that way?
Yeah. So one thing that I learned from my teachers, which I always like to say and think about in terms of dramaturgy, is let's throw things at the piece and see what sticks. That's part of what a dramaturg's job is. It's also to, you know, research the production history, read other things that the author has written, try and situate the play in its time period when it was written, and also figure out how it relates to this time and this group of people that are producing it. But yeah, I guess I've been doing some research around your question. Will you say your question again?
Yeah, how you help the cast decide the decisions they're going to make. Like, for instance, is it going to be naturalistic? Is it going to be completely unrealistic? Like, how do you lay that out?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's definitely a conversation with the two directors, in this case, Lily Spottiswood and Sarah. And to me, reading this play, there was definitely a kind of it didn't feel like naturalism to me. There's a truth of human experience in it, but it didn't feel like it was striving to be as realistic as possible. Reading the middle part especially, I started thinking about what various kinds of styles you might do this play in. And I started reading this book by a wonderful physical theater artist named John Wright, who wrote a book called Why Is That So Funny? And he talks about all kinds of different styles of physical theater and physical comedy, such as melodrama and clown and parody and buffoon. And I think that some of our conversations around those different styles were really helpful, because, and you know, Fed and Sarah can speak to this too, but as much as this is a play about sex, it's also a play about exchanges of power. And while these characters might be performing sex acts on stage, they might not be doing it with the words that one might expect. And I think that we discovered that the style of grotesque realism or buffoonery met the middle part of the play really nicely. There's this very old tradition of buffoons kind of holding a mirror up to society and showing audiences a very full range of the human experience, everything from the ugly to the beautiful, with an emphasis on the ugly. And buffoons are famous for taking things too far. And there's this line from John Wright's book where he says that buffoons are not exactly politically incorrect, they're politically obscene. And I thought that was interesting in terms of the material of this piece, to see what happens when you take it to that level. It becomes absurd. I mean, there are, what did you guys say? There are 20 orgasms that happen in the space of half an hour of stage time, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. And there's something, I think, which is inherent in the rhythm of the play, and Wally Shawn's language, which begs a certain absurdity and has a kind of comedy embedded in it. And to me, that is ultimately pretty political. We can talk a little bit about like how we first felt when we read the plays, but when I initially read it, I felt nervous. I felt scared. I wasn't sure if this was a good idea. I wasn't sure if I agreed with the kind of sex that was being represented on stage. And then I sort of took a step back and thought, okay, so what else is going on here? What else is pushing in on the world of this play? What else was Mr. Sean thinking about when he wrote this play besides just sex? And he has this essay called Writing About Sex, where he talks a lot about how we see ourselves as humans. And he talks about how most bourgeois people, including me, this is him writing this. He says, most bourgeois people, including me, still walk around with an image of themselves in their heads that doesn't include, well, that, meaning sex. You know, when we think about ourselves, we think about reading the newspaper, we think about paying the bills, we think about going to the theater, even. And we don't think about sex, which is something that animals engage in and that I think most people engage in. And there can be something very subversive, very political, very interesting about explicitly showing that part of ourselves to ourselves on stage. And that kind of unlocked the play for me a lot.
Fed and Sarah, did you have similar concerns or possible objections to the content when you first became involved?
Yeah, I mean, we were terrified. I certainly was. I think to me, it was a big black box of how this was ever going to be put up. You know, it just seemed like the there's this first thought that is, you know, very straightforward that I loved the writing to. And then the second thought that is just impossible. and then the last thought, which is, you know, like a beautiful song written almost like a song, like the lyrics to a song. But yeah, in the middle section, it was pretty scary. I mean, you know, there's a stage direction that says he gets up, penetrates her until he comes. And then I think that's the very first sexual act. And as soon as we read that, it's like, wow, this is really intense of a play to put up. But the language is just, it's just written so well. And there's such a rhythm to it. So it was a real conundrum when we first approached it.
Yeah, I knew the first part of the play already. And then as Frank, the theater company, was sort of going back and forth, what should we do? What do we want our next project to be? I remembered this play and I suggested it because there are sort of three parts to it. And the first part is a young couple in a hotel room in a foreign country, an unspecified foreign country, where it's hot, there are bugs everywhere, there's a lot of noise outside, and this couple feel alienated from their surroundings, and they've come there, presumably, to sort of reinvigorate their relationship. And it's a series of missed connections. They talk a lot, they talk quickly, they talk about the decor in the room, they talk about what food they're going to eat, they talk about what outfits they're buying, they talk about what games to play, they talk about what books to read, but they can't bring themselves to engage with each other and with each other's bodies. And they try to engage through every medium except for just touching each other. And then the second play, and it's really beautifully captured, and I definitely could see myself and relationships I've been in that situation, in that first part of the play. And then the second part, the second thought, takes place in a youth hostel. And these four young characters sort of find themselves stumbling in and out of each other's rooms, talking about flowers, talking about, what else do they talk about? Talking about they eat some Chinese food. They talk bugs. About a bear, bugs. They also talk about bugs. Yeah. And they're all traveling, and it's sort of unclear whether they know each other or don't know each other, but they end up stumbling into each other's rooms and having a bunch of sex. And it's a world in which all sort of social convention is taken away. And it's what would happen if every time you had an impulse to do anything, It's almost like the impulse happens before the thought. The impulse, it's like the characters find themselves in the middle of a sexual act before they've even realized they had that desire. So there's a sort of different order of decision making or something. There's like a lack of decision making, and it's what the first couple in the first part wasn't able to achieve, a sort of abandon and life through a physical experience. The characters in the second play are able to achieve to an extreme and sort of fantastical measure. And then the third part of the play is a woman, a young woman, waking up in the morning, having her coffee, and just speaking directly to the audience. It's sort of like a prayer almost. It's a, she talks to the audience about a former lover and her memory of him. And it's almost like an incantation, or after this madness in the second thought, with all this sex and all this energy and all these games and power play, there's a person who comes and just speaks directly to the audience about a lover, and more about a private recollection of a lover from the past. But so when I found this play, I loved the first part and the last part. And then this middle part, I also thought like, oh God, what is this? Why? Oh, I wish he hadn't written this middle part. It just seems awful and impossible. And then when we found ourselves in a room together, when the company did a reading through the whole play, it just, for some reason, we all, you know, we got the giggles and we couldn't stop laughing, and it seemed totally crazy, and it seemed totally similar to many of our own experiences, like sort of an extreme version of our desires. And if we really had let ourselves do what we had wanted in any given moment with our peers, these kind of situations could have come about. And so I think we all felt really sort of shocked to find ourselves completely identifying with these characters. And really, it was a satisfying and pleasurable experience to see ourselves as these people, creatures of impulse and abandon.
And being involved in this, is it different than doing a play where there, I mean, clearly it's different than doing a play where there's not nudity and a lot of sex, but like, how is it different for you as either an actor or someone who's involved in another capacity?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the really great things that made me understand a lot of this play was we did something that I think a lot of acting teachers do, which is, you know, we moved around on a grid that, like, it just means that you make an imaginary grid that you can only take sharp right turns, and this was an exercise that we were doing, and we were told to just feel different parts of our body, like, oh, okay, all of a sudden we concentrate on our fingers or concentrate on our necks. And so, like, as you walk, you know, you move your neck around and see how your neck is feeling at that moment. And really, I have done that many times in different rehearsal spaces. And the only difference with this one was then we moved to our genitalia. And how does our genitalia feel? And, you know, and then we kind of all started, you know, making humping or humping movements or not, or make, looking that we had to pee or something like that. So it's like opening up that one part that is not normally explored, but is just as natural as how do your fingers feel. And so I think like the play, it was very, very different when we first did it, and then it seemed very natural.
And where does this play stand in relation to the other works by Wallace Shawn? Like, how did you find that? Is all of his work this sexual?
No.
Oh, okay.
I haven't read, I'm, you know, by no means an expert on him, and I haven't read everything of his by any means, but it's one of his earliest plays. And I think it's one of the ones that deals more explicitly with sex. Some of his plays, like for instance, The Fever, which is another one included in the same anthology as this one, is just a one-person monologue meant to be performed in an apartment. So that automatically in its form is very different from a play in three parts with multiple people. He has his other works are not necessarily as explicit in terms of sex. He became much more outspokenly political, I think, as his career has matured, and you might see some of that content reflected in his later work. He's pretty interested in socialism, I think, and talks about that in some of his later work, which he doesn't so much in this piece. Also, primarily, these are younger characters, which is not the case in a lot of his other work as well. But yeah, I think it's set apart from many of his other work. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting about him is he tends to explore subjects that people in society would like to remain hidden. He's explored sex really explicitly in this play, and in some other of his plays too, he deals with sex and desire and lust. But also he writes a lot about privilege, and sort of being a member of the privileged class and what that means, and making sort of the invisible visible. So there are certain class structures that we'd like to pretend don't exist, or also in terms of that. I think that's partly what interests him about sex. There are all these ways that it informs our interactions that we'd like to pretend to ignore. He has a play that he wrote alongside or right before A Thought in Three Parts is called Our Late Night. And it similarly deals with a bunch of people at a cocktail party. And everything that sort of comes to the surface in A Thought in Three Parts with people's sexual configurations is more subtextual in Our Late Night. But it's a lot of his work is about human interaction and what people want from each other, how they would like to be seen, not like to be seen, what they would like to hide and what they would like to show. The Designated Mourner, which is a play he wrote, is now a film directed by David Hare that people could see. Other important works include Aunt Dan and Lemon, Marie and Bruce, and Grasses of a Thousand Colors is a more recent play. And he did, he filmed a dinner conversation with a great theater director named Andre Gregory. And it's the two of them sort of talking over a meal about a lot of the issues that he deals with in his plays. So were someone interested in getting to know his work better, that's a great jumping off point. It's called My Dinner with Andre. And as well as his collection of essays entitled Essays, where he talks about things ranging from aesthetics to writing about sex to dreams and he touches on some of his socialist leanings. There's a great article that Catherine actually shared with us early on in our process called Why I Call Myself a Socialist, which was reported by the Huffington Post. And that's easily Googleable as well. So if you're interested in him, those are some other references.
Also, in terms of his book called Essays, I stumbled across one of them called Aesthetic Preferences, which, if you're interested, Fran Lebowitz reads out loud as part of WNYC's, I think it's called Talk to Me. so you can find that online, and it's really funny to hear Fran Lebowitz read it out loud. But there is this kind of dreamlike quality to this play that I think we've all discovered in different ways as actors and directors and dramaturgs. And it makes some of the content more digestible to me, at least. He, in this essay, Aesthetic Preferences, he talks a lot about dreams and nightmares. He says, there are clearly different categories of dreams that vie for primacy in each human soul. Some are dreams of conquest, victory, or revenge. Others are dreams of sensuality, beauty, joy, kindness, and love. Artistic objects are not brainwashing machines. They have influence, but not power. But I think we're influenced by our daytime dreams just as much as we're influenced by our family, friends, and personal experience. And then this is this part where he says, dreams can even agitate for change or for a better world, sometimes simply by offering people a glimpse of something agreeable that might be pursued, or crystallizing into a vivid nightmare something awful that ought to be avoided. Dreams are actually involved in a serious battle, despite a certain lightness in their presentation. They're not joking. And I think that, first of all, there's an amazing amount of falling asleep and waking up over the course of these three playlets in A Thought in Three Parts. But there is also just an acute exploration of the subconscious. And I think that if an audience member were to walk into our production and think about what they're seeing in the context of a dream or a nightmare, they would get a lot out of it. And it might help them situate the content that they're seeing in a way.
And what are you all getting out of it? Is a sort of a wrappy-uppy sort of question. What are you getting out of your involvement in this show?
I think that for me, I'm learning a lot. It feels like there was this thing that we didn't really ever talk about. And I feel much more truthful, at least with this group of people, about, you know, the way that we think about sex and the way that we look at it. And it's not actually so different from each other. And there are certain differences, and it's really nice to have differences, but there's a lot also that's the same. So for me, I just feel more comfortable, I think, with my own feelings. The way I think that probably Wallace Shawn was when he wrote it, that he felt very, you know, obviously felt comfortable enough to, a lot of this is just his mind kind of exploding and allowing himself to go through all of these things. And as an actor, I'm allowed to go through all those kind of feelings instead of a normal rehearsal process where, you know, if any of those kind of instincts are decidedly suppressed. So in this process, we allow ourselves to follow through in a certain way. And it's very, very fulfilling.
Yeah, it's really exciting to share this kind of, I mean, what Catherine was talking about in terms of like a waking dream, to be able to go into a fantasy with others. And it's not quite real, but it's not fake either. You're really going through these motions and you're really having these interactions. And I'm really excited about the possibility of sharing a collective fantasy with an audience. And as a performer, I find it incredibly liberating to ask some of these questions about what it means to portray sex, or what it means to get naked on stage, even, and going through or exploring all of these different elements as a performer, which I've never had to explore before, like how do I perform an orgasm, or how do I jerk someone off, or how do I let someone eat me out in a convincing way? Those are all things that have liberated me as a performer and as a person walking on the street to let myself have a little more authority in terms of my own experience, but also to receive other people in a different way, knowing that we're, you know, more, some of us more privately and some of us more publicly are all wiping our anuses every day. We're all masturbating daily or having fantasies daily about each other. And rather than suppressing that, it's interesting to take some time to explore what that means and explore what that means in a collective, so in a theater group, but then also with an audience, to explore what that means in a society.
Thinking a lot about this line between human, the human and the animal has been pretty fascinating for me. And I think that the play has really brought that to the fore for me. I sort of feel like this play has presented me with like three balls to juggle: the personal, the political, and the artistic. And I'm still trying to figure out how to keep them all in the air effectively. But it's exciting when a piece of art, when a piece of written work on a page can cause you to do that. And I hope that I think this play presents more questions than answers. And I hope that it sparks discussion and feeling in the audience as much as it has with us.
All right. So that is A Thought in Three Parts, put on by the Frank Theater Company. How can people support this endeavor and how can they come see it?
Well, you can get tickets at frankpresents.org. If you go to our website, on the first page, there's a link that says buy tickets here. And it's just running over a long weekend, February 2nd through 5th at the Jean Frankel Theater in New York City. You can also go to the Jean Frankel Theater's website and you can buy tickets through them. It's $10 for a ticket, and it's Thursday night at 7 p.m., Friday and Saturday at 7 p.m. and 9:30 p.m., and Sunday at 2 p.m.
Beautiful. All right. And can people still help you on your Kickstarter?
Always. That would be great. We're like just over $600 from our goal. So anything would be a great help. And if you donate $20, that will get you in to see the show. A ticket is included in that $20 donation.
And we would love to see some people from Philadelphia in the audience in New York.
Well, you know that they're from Philly because they'll wear like hideous jerseys or something.
We can spot them.
Okay. As long as they bring cannoli, that'll be fine. All right. Well, thank you all so much for this awesome conversation. So break all your appendages. And everyone, go see the show. Thank you.
Thanks
all.
So much.
Thank you, Timmy.
Thank you very much, and have a good day.
Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmy. Please check out more from sexwithtimmy.com, where Monday through Friday there's new content, including polls, weekly sex columns, and Friday sex links. And if you have any questions, comments, or violent reactions, please email them to sexwithtimmy@gmail.com. That's sexwithtimmare@gmail.com. And thank you.